Hi everyone, and welcome to this edition of the DWR podcast. My name is Simon Tappan, and I'm the Clinical Director here at DWR Veterinary Specialists. And this week I'm here with James Oliver, our Head of Ophthalmology.
Hi Simon, great to be here.
Yeah, great to see you. Really good to talk to you. So, James, you're our Head of Ophthalmology at DWR, but you're also a European and RCVS Specialist in Veterinary Ophthalmology and a Fellow of the RCVS. Can you tell me a bit more about your career and where you've got to and how you're here today?
Yeah, of course. So I qualified from the University of Bristol back in 2002, and I went straight into primary care practice, working just with small animals, predominantly cats and dogs. And I spent 5 years there in practice, and that was in practice when I got an interest in ophthalmology and did various courses and a postgraduate qualification. And then from then, I applied to do a residency training program, which is what's required to eventually become a specialist. I've worked in a few different specialist centres over the years, running various ophthalmology services in Kent and Cambridgeshire. And I joined DWR in 2016, I believe. So I've been here almost 10 years.
Yeah, it's probably sounded quite a long time, but you've enjoyed working here?
I have. I mean, the place has changed a lot in the time, I think I'm one of the vets who've been here the longest now. It's a great place. It's a lot bigger than it used to be, and that has its advantages. We've got so many amazing colleagues working in various departments who support us in our day-to-day work as ophthalmologists, so it's really great sort of collaborative team.
Yeah, really multidisciplinary approach, which is fantastic. So you mentioned training programs and doing a residency. What is a residency? What's involved in doing that?
So a residency is usually a 3, sometimes 4 year training program in a particular discipline. And these are governed by a European college of that discipline, just to make sure that the training adheres to the specific requirements which have been made. So typically, a vet who's usually got a bit of experience behind them and some experience in that specialty, whether it be medicine or surgery or ophthalmology, will start off training under the supervision of one or more specialists to gain experience in dealing with diseases of various natures in that discipline, and will go on to develop a case log to demonstrate their experience, along with doing some research as well. And at the end of 3 or 4 years of hard training, they then apply to sit the examinations. And if they can pass those, they can go on to become a specialist.
Perfect. Thank you. So we've got some residents in ophthalmology at the moment as part of our team.
Yes, we do. We have Amy, who's a final year resident, and she's due to finish her training in June, and then she'll start studying for exams next year.
Yeah, we all look forward to the exams. Yeah. Perfect. Thank you. And you've been involved in some of the college committees as well, looking after residency programmes.
Absolutely. So I joined the Education Residency Committee, and I was on that committee for about 10 years and ended up being the chair of the committee for 3 years. And that committee oversees the training of residents in veterinary ophthalmology under the European College all over the world. It's mainly in Europe, but we do have some dotted around in Canada, the States, and Australia as well.
Perfect, sounds really interesting. So we talked a little bit about DWR, obviously ophthalmologists say looking at eyes within patients at DWR. What does your normal day look like? What happens?
Well, the day is quite varied actually, which I suppose is quite typical of being a vet, which makes it really interesting. But typically we come to work around 8 o'clock and we examine any inpatients we might have. And then as a team, we meet up around 8:30 to discuss them and the plans for them for the day. They might be having a procedures or investigations, or they might be going home that day. And then either we'll be consulting, which means meeting clients and their patients and examine their patients for whatever issue they've been brought in with us to see us for, or we might be on surgery as well. And then in between that, there's the other kind of administrative type things to deal with. So writing reports to our referring vets, discharging patients to their owners, examining patients from other disciplines, which is a great advantage of being in a multidisciplinary setting that we can support those other services. And then there's teaching as well. So with our residencies, we'll be aiming to improve their skills and knowledge of veterinary ophthalmology as a whole.
Perfect, thank you. So at DWR, we just see cats and dogs on site. Is that right? And you're involved in doing a little bit of vet kind of work as well?
Yeah, so at DWR itself, we typically only see dogs and cats. Very occasionally, we might see a rabbit. And we do get to see the odd horse, actually. We do get invited to off-site to examine horses occasionally. And as part of the training of the residents, they need to examine multiple species. So we tend to collaborate with various farms and zoos and also colleagues who have pets so that they get the experience in all the species. And that could be anything from, you know, frogs and lizards up to falcons and other birds.
Interesting. So there's a huge variety of veterinary ophthalmology encompasses all of the species. So.
Absolutely. It's one of those disciplines where they need to be familiar with, well, many, many, many different species, because you never know when you might be called on to examine an eye. And actually, it was just a couple of weeks ago that I got asked to go and see a sea lion with an eye problem at a local zoo, which was a first for me.
Excellent. And do they have any quirky anatomical setups?
Well, I didn't really know what to expect, so I did as much background reading as I could. They have very small pupils, which allows them to focus light on a specific part of the retina. And the pupil is shaped like a teardrop, which I thought was quite apt for veterinary ophthalmology.
Oh, okay, excellent. And any other weird and wonderful eyes that you've looked at?
Well, Amy, our resident, has just been to visit the collection of one of our client care team associates, who has a number of interesting species. So he has tarantulas, lizards, and frogs, and all sorts of things. So she found that a fascinating experience.
Yeah, sounds amazing. Perfect. Thank you. So you talked about procedures, and you talked about being on surgery as part of your working day. What sorts of procedures do you do commonly?
So very varied. So we operate on all parts of the eye, essentially. But I would say perhaps the most common procedure that we do is cataract surgery, where we remove the lens of the eye in a blind animal, and then we replace it with a lens implant. And that is an incredibly rewarding surgery, because you take an animal which is usually completely blind and restoring their sight, and their quality of life improves dramatically.
So that sounds really interesting. So the cataracts form in the same way as they do in people, is that similar? Or?
They can do. I mean, cataracts form in a number of ways, age-related being the most common form. But dogs are also a little bit quirky, and those dogs with diabetes tend to develop cataracts. So all dogs with diabetes, as long as they live long enough, will develop cataracts, which people don't really get. So it's really important that as a vet, if you diagnose diabetes in a dog, you warn the client that they're going to get cataracts as well, are going to need cataract surgery at some point. So I'd say diabetic dogs form about half of our caseload of cataract surgeries. Other causes are inherited, some are born with cataracts, and some just develop with age.
Excellent. So is this a commonly done procedure? It's fairly straightforward for you to do, or is it what happens?
It requires a lot of training, a lot of experience and skills. So that's why our residents aren't allowed to do cataract surgery until they've done in their final years. They've been training for a good couple of years, assisting specialists. But it is a complex procedure, and it does take many hundreds of operations until one becomes very proficient at it, but it's an incredibly rewarding procedure to do, and the outcome is very satisfactory.
Yeah, I'm sure taking a dog that can't see to be able to have good vision afterwards sounds amazing. Yeah, awesome. So do cats get cataracts?
They do get cataracts, but certainly far less commonly than dogs. So firstly, we don't see diabetes as frequently as cats, and also cats with diabetes rarely get cataracts as well. The main cause of cataracts in cats, I would say, is due to inflammation of the eye, and that might mean that cataract surgery is less appropriate for them. But we do see some cats, and when we do operate on cats, they tend to do extremely well, actually.
Okay, interesting. I didn't sort of appreciate those differences, because we see a lot of cats with diabetes, but they don't get so many cataracts. Yeah. Perfect. So you're talking a little bit at the beginning about interest in research, and you've obviously done a PhD as well. So can you tell me a little bit about your research interests and perhaps what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, of course. So as an ophthalmologist, it occurred to me that there's one condition in particular which was extremely frustrating, and that was glaucoma. So glaucoma is caused by a number of things, and one cause is inherited glaucoma. So certain pedigree dogs go on to develop high eye pressure, which is blinding and painful. And sadly, nearly all these dogs end up having to have their eyes removed, which is obviously extremely distressing. So I wanted to look at the genetics of this because I thought if we could identify genetic mutations responsible for the glaucoma, we could then develop DNA tests to prevent dogs being mated inappropriately, which would then result in their offspring developing glaucoma in later life. So my PhD was looking at the genetics of glaucoma, and we were able to find the genetic mutations responsible for glaucoma in a few different breeds, and develop DNA tests so that with DNA testing and selective breeding, glaucoma can essentially be eradicated. Now, we've not solved all glaucoma, and we continue to investigate those. So I collaborate with the Cambridge Genetic Centre, which is part of the vet school in Cambridge. And also I've expanded the research to include other inherited eye diseases. So I've been involved in looking at cataracts and retinal degeneration as well. And most recently, we found the cause of an unusual condition where dogs, and in this situation, it's the Cocker Spaniel, become blind as a result of low vitamin E levels. Now, these dogs have normal vitamin E in their diet, but for whatever reason, could not get it into their bloodstream. And so they were suffering from visual deficits and blindness, and sometimes neurological disease as well. So we found a mutation in a gene which gets vitamin E into the bloodstream. And we've been able to develop a DNA test so that Cocker Spaniel breeders can use that DNA test and with that test avoid matings which would lead to affected dogs. And furthermore, they can do the DNA test in dogs which are already alive and with us to see if they have the mutation. And if they have two copies of the mutation, then we can intervene early and treat them before they get visual deficits or neurological disease. So it was an interesting piece of work, and I'm really I'm glad it's been published and it's out there, and it should make a great difference to a lot of dogs.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. So we can pick up the disease in the early stages before it causes a problem and treat it, but then also make decisions about mating to reduce the frequency in the population.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic. And I know we have residents at DWR. We've talked about the ones in ophthalmology, but supporting the residents to do research, I know, is something that you're quite passionate about. So how have you found that, or what are you involved in?
Oh, over the years, I've trained a number of residents now, and I tend to like them to guide their own research because, in my opinion, they get much more out of a research project if it's come from their own imagination, because they're going to be more committed to it and find it more interesting. But some of my residents have wanted to adopt investigations into inherited eye disease as well, which give them a very different kind of approach to research that most residents will get, because they can actually do some lab-based stuff. Others have looked at more clinical-based things, so looking at data of patients with various conditions and trying to find and trends or treatments which are more effective than others. And then others have made use of developing technology to see how that they can be used to improve treatment. So, for example, we're currently undertaking a project, collaborating with other centres to see how UV light can be used to kill bacteria in infected corneal ulcers. So that's something that our future residents will be able to be involved in as well.
Yeah, that sounds very very good. It's sort of really simple things that have a really big impact. I mean, the genetic testing, that sounds amazing in terms of making big strides forward in terms of the health of our dog breeds, which is fantastic. So we talked about residency training. Obviously, that's mainly clinical and seeing cases, but obviously we have to do the research as part of those training programs as well. So there's obviously a skill in terms of setting out clinical studies, doing all the statistics and things like that, and training residents to have that scientific approach as well as a clinical approach. I guess it's finding that balance for individuals, isn't it?
It is, and when you start doing research, it is a bit of a steep learning curve, so a lot of guidance is required on that, and we've got a lot of support from central teams in Linnaeus in terms of study design, statistics, and there are various courses out there which residents can attend free of charge, which is incredibly useful for them. But yeah, I think the research projects are they're a requirement of most colleges now to do at least one or two different research projects and to get them published in the peer-reviewed literature. And most residents find that a really interesting, rewarding experience.
Yeah, we've collated a lot of the research that we've done at DW, haven't we? We actually have a phenomenal output of papers that are reported and published.
We do, and that's largely a result of what a strong and diverse residency training programme we have here. So I currently am the clinical research lead at DWR, so I'm responsible at keeping a tab on our research output and documenting that and then feeding that back in so that we've got the data to see what we are presenting, what we are publishing, and also the difference that we're making to pets' lives.
Perfect. Thank you very much, James. So obviously you're hugely passionate about ophthalmology, looking at eyes. Obviously there will be some of our colleagues in the junior stages of their career that are keen to be budding veterinary ophthalmologists. What advice would you give them?
First thing I would say is go and spend time with as many different veterinary ophthalmologists as you can. So typically that's your local specialist centre, so one which has diplomates in that discipline, and just get a feel for the subject a bit more and how patients are examined and how they are worked up, and that will give you an inkling as to whether indeed that discipline is right for you. The other thing I would suggest is join local committees and congresses. So for example, for ophthalmology, the British Association of Veterinary Ophthalmology is a very welcoming conference, and they have two meetings a year, and anyone is welcome, from new grads to experienced specialists as well, and that'll give you the opportunity to network, to learn more, and also get a foot in the door of veterinary ophthalmology and decide if that's what you want to pursue as a career.
Perfect. Sounds great. We often have vets come to shadow your team for the day, don't we, to spend time and see how things work.
We do, and they come from all over the world, actually. And that can be that they're interested in becoming a specialist, or perhaps they're training to become a specialist in another discipline, for example, neurology, and they want to learn more about ophthalmology as part of that. Or they could be interested in applying for a residency training program with us. And obviously, we like to meet those people and spend as much time with them as possible to ensure that we're a good fit, and it's gonna work for both of us.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you, James, so thank you very much for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you. So I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to this too. If you'd like to know any more about DWR veterinary specialists, then head over to our website at www.dwr.vet, or you can follow us on social media and look out for the hashtag Proudly DWR, together creating a better world for pets.